in the traditional view, stress is a feeling that results from external events. While responding to continued stressful events, the mind and body eventually falter, anything from a headache to a heart attack. We now know that the harm comes from your reaction to the event, your internal response, not the event itself. In this part of our training program, we'll concentrate on three main points. A, if you control your internal response, you can avoid being stressed out while continuing to perform in potentially stressful settings. B, the strategies of this mental toughness training program will allow you to start having control over your internal responses. By integrating the strategies, by making them part of your life, you'll consistently perform at a high level, even in the face of some pretty intense pressure. And C, not succumbing to negative stress is a result in part of managing your energy effectively. As you'll see, the important strategy of periodization is a reminder that the stressors of everyday life, the energy drains, must be balanced with rest and recovery.
Randy was a 13-year-old budding tennis star, talented, driven, focused. He knew what he wanted and he was willing to pay the price. That's why his family moved from Detroit to Bradenton, Florida, so he could attend the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy to pursue his dream of becoming a great player. The NBTA, the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy, is the largest training academy of its kind in the world and has been the home of lots of superstars, including Andre Agassi, Monica Seles, Aaron Krickstein, Jim Courier, David Wheaton, and scores of others. Randy's family made great sacrifices so he could follow his dream, and Randy was bound and determined to take full advantage of everything he could. Randy is a perfectionist. He demanded the best from himself both on the court and at school. Long days, short nights, lots of work, and lots of self-imposed stress started to take its toll. Randy's coaches began to see changes that were puzzling on the court. The first sign was below-average performance in challenge matches, but that was kind of just the beginning. A major attitudinal change was clearly occurring within Randy that seemed to affect everything he was doing. His fire, his energy, his spirit was not the same. His sense of fun and joy began to fade when he played. His sense of fight, his mental toughness gave way to low-intensity practice, frequent anger and temper outbursts, and lots of complaining and criticizing. Randy found it increasingly difficult to even go to school or to show up for tennis. Over and again, he would argue that he didn't have the energy to do it anymore. It just was too much. All he wanted to do was sleep, amazingly enough. A young boy who had so much energy and so much desire, suddenly, all he wanted to do was sleep. And that's exactly what he would do. Sleep for hours and wake up again even more tired. Randy also became chronically sick. Every flu or cold bug within 100 miles he would catch. Randy continued to deteriorate from very little school and very little tennis to virtually no school and no tennis. He didn't have the energy. Randy's condition continued to worsen until literally he lay in bed unable to summon enough energy to raise his arm above his head. Obviously, Randy's parents were in a panic. They saw the changes clearly, and during the several-month period, took Randy to the best specialist in the United States. No one had an answer. And from all indications, Randy was literally dying. Randy had been diagnosed as having chronic fatigue syndrome, CFS, cause unknown, although excessive stress was thought to be the culprit, and cure unknown. Most of the doctors prescribed total rest for his condition. But Randy was sleeping nearly 24 hours a day and steadily getting worse. According to one of the doctors, Randy was a classic case of tennis burnout. I vividly remember the desperation call I received from Randy's mother. She said, "My son is dying. No one can help. I'm totally lost." She then asked me, "If Randy were your son, if you knew he were dying, what would you do?" I thought for a moment, and then I said, "I would have my good friend Dr. Irv Dardick take a look." Dr. Dardick is a cardiovascular surgeon and founding chairman of the United States Olympic Committee on Sports Medicine. For years, he has studied the connection between cycles of stress as measured by heart rate and such things as athletic performance, immune system effectiveness, and overall patterns of mental and physical health. Dardick agreed to fly to Bradenton to see Randy and eventually confirmed the diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome. He hypothesized that the cause was indeed excessive stress, and what Randy was really fighting was an extreme case of burnout. He agreed with those evaluations. But surprisingly, Dr. Dardick did not agree that rest was the best way to reverse the condition. From all that he could determine, Randy's body was simply responding in the best way it could to long-standing chronic cycles of stress that were inadequately balanced with proper cycles of recovery and rest. In the process, however, his physiology became so dramatically altered that his capacity for any kind of energy expenditure was nearly lost altogether. Dardick began by simply having Randy sit up in bed, which created a cycle of stress, increased heart rate, and then followed it with a symmetrical cycle of recovery, decreased heart rate, having Randy lie back down and rest. Dr. Dardick's intent was to reteach Randy's body the mechanisms of energy expenditure, and in other words, stress, and energy recovery, rest. After only 1 month of controlled waves in a predetermined pattern, Randy showed dramatic improvement. Within 3 months, Randy returned to playing tournament tennis and by all indicators is fully recovered. An amazing turnaround. I want to just give a little sense of how Dr. Dardick describes the human body because I think it's really appropriate to what we're trying to do here in this arena of peak performance. He describes the human body as a nearly infinite series of delicately tuned biological clocks, each clock pulsating to its own rhythm. According to Dardick, performance and health occur when all of the biological clocks become perfectly synchronized together. A necessary condition is that the cycles of stress become properly balanced with equal cycles of recovery. Something that is often overlooked is that we must have stress in our life to be healthy. One must constantly challenge the body both physically, mentally, emotionally, to produce healthy energy and recovery. Very simply, no stress, no life. The oscillating nature of stress and recovery, in a real sense, says Dardick, creates the chemistry of life. Of importance also is that the countless numbers of biological clocks within our bodies, each pulsating to its own rhythm of stress and recovery, must be synchronized together. This harmonization process can be accomplished by carefully regulating patterns of eating, sleeping, and exercise, and by properly balancing work-rest ratios. Dardick believes that of all the strategies we have for resetting faulty clocks, the most effective one is physical exercise, something we're going to talk a lot more about in a future tape. He uses exercise and recovery to create healthy waveform cycles of work and rest. He does this by carefully monitoring heart rates during workouts so that intervals of stress, such as running and cycling and swimming, are completely balanced with intervals of recovery and relaxation. The point, he says, is literally making waves. You can work as hard as you like, provided you continue to punctuate the cycles of stress with corresponding cycles of complete recovery. That is the key to life, productivity, and peak performance. Achieving long-term health and peak performance means making waves then, lots of waves, but waves that are balanced and waves that are symmetrical. This mentally tough program is designed to teach you how to utilize energy more effectively and to improve your capacity for energy recovery. We're trying to train the energy recovery mechanisms. You're going to learn how to train during your non-work periods so that optimal performance is achievable during work periods.
More than ever, I believe we need the model of stress that we're talking about in order to really understand it, because we have left the industrial age and we're in the information age, and we need new ways to deal with the new kinds of stress that explorers have to deal with. We are now explorers. As Margaret Mead said, we're explorers in time as our forefathers were in space, and that means everything is new and everything has the potential to quote-unquote stress us out. One of the things I think that we're going to try and teach in this tape is that stress is in fact a reaction to an event. It's a biochemical event that takes place in your body that's a reaction to things that you see around you. And How we can deal with our reactions is going to be the real key. When then we use something like exercise or diet, as we'll talk about later, to create new waves of relaxation for bodies that are stressed out in totally different ways, it will begin to make sense to us. And all of a sudden, when we see a plan for ourselves, when you see a plan for yourself to put the opposite cycle or wave of relaxation to the stress waves that are coming in, you now leave the role of victim and become the role of orchestrator. And that's when you take off.
It's so difficult for athletes initially to accept the premise that stress is not an event. Tennis players, for instance, they have to play in the wind. And you tell them that it's not the wind that's the stressor. It's their interpretation of the wind. And they fight you. And they say, no, it's the wind itself that's the stressor. Or the bad line call. But in fact, when they begin to learn that stress is occurring inside their bodies, it is a biochemical event in response to what's happening and their interpretation of what's happening on the outside world. And then they can begin to take responsibility for the interpretation they give to that event. Then a whole new sense of control comes forth. And what maybe has been extremely stressful in the past and has cost them dearly, no longer is costing them. That in fact, the deposits that they've made in the bank are preserved much more satisfactorily during the contest, because they have been able to withdraw only when it's really critical, when it's at a really important time, as opposed to wasting a lot of those energy reserves in stress responses in the form of anger or fury or very upset, and even fear responses are responses that are a function of the way in which you are interpreting the world outside. And anger makes it nearly impossible to recover. The key to anger is that you don't recover well from it. You can hold the anger in for days. You literally never recover. And that's why the energy recovery mechanisms can't work if you're walking around carrying a lot of anger all day, but the body doesn't recover. You can give the example of tennis players. We learned that most tennis players, unlike John McEnroe, cannot carry anger, because if they do, they can't recover, and their heart rate stays very high for prolonged periods of time. So it interferes with recovery mechanisms.
What we're seeing now in the corporate arena, because of the change of the industrial age to the information age, that most companies are turning over, being bought, using all new people, totally changing accounting systems, changing relationship building systems, changing the way they market. And the common response that I have seen has been anger. And what happens when you get angry, first and foremost, we know you raise your level of norepinephrine. It literally takes you from, if you were at the high positive or the low positive energy cell, it takes you right away to the high negative. And a number of things happen. We know from what we've talked about previously, your performance suffers.
Today is a big day for you. You're meeting with the president of your company, the head of your department, and the chief loan officer from the bank. It's the biggest deal you've ever put together. If this meeting goes well, your future could be very different. Big dollars are at stake. The meeting is at 8 a.m. in the morning. You're nervous. You leave in plenty of time because you want to be there early and get everything ready. You get to the freeway and it's absolutely jammed with cars. There's a big accident on the bridge. How could you ever have anticipated that? Traffic crawls along, but you still should be okay. You feel all right because you did start early. Then the unthinkable happens. You feel a strange thumping in the front of the car. It's hard to steer. You pull the car over, jump out, traffic everywhere. God forbid you have a flat tire. How could it be? You've got the most important meeting of your career and this happens. And you haven't changed a tire in 5 bloody years. You're furious. Your hands are trembling. Your career flashes in front of you. All the work for this deal. How horribly unlucky you are. 31 minutes later, the spare tire is on. But there's no way you can make the meeting on time. And you've got grease all over your hands and your shirt. You look a mess. You arrive at the meeting 12 minutes late, looking like a crazed madman. Your ability to think clearly and contribute to the meeting was seriously impaired due to the unfortunate bad luck on the road. You kept apologizing for your state of mind, but nobody really seemed to care or understand what you had just been through. Same scenario, only this time it's Mr. Mentally Tough. Same deal, same traffic, same flat tire. You pull the car over and jump out. For a moment, you're stunned. This can't be happening. You start to panic, but you catch yourself. You back off and get a big picture perspective. This is really crazy. My biggest deal, and here I am. You think to yourself, challenge. You glance at your watch. Okay, if I can change this tire in 20 minutes or less, I'll still be fine. I feel like Larry Bird with 1 minute and 55 seconds left in the game. We're down by 7. Come on, give me the ball. Okay, I've got to be like Andretti's pit crew. But I can get no grease on my hands and my shirt. What a challenge. I love it. Because you stay cool and relaxed, your mind works clearly, and your motor coordination is excellent. It's amazing, but you almost seem to be having fun solving this incredibly crazy problem. You think about what a great story this is going to make to your president and department head when you get to the meeting. They're all going to get a good laugh. I'll tell them how cool and smooth I was under pressure. What a great way to start the meeting. As it turned out, you weren't able to break the 20-minute barrier. One of the lug nuts was really stuck. But you did make it in 23 and a half minutes. Actually, you were real proud of your performance. When it was all said and done, you were only a few minutes late. No problem, you said to yourself. Just a good warm-up for the solving problems that I'm going to do in the meeting. The rest of your trip into the office, you just visualized how you wanted the meeting to go. You were really psyched, and when you hit the deck, you were ready.
The example that Jim has just given you about Mr. Mentally Mush and Dr. Mentally Tough are really appropriate examples, because if you really look at the story, it's the same event in reality, but it's just two different people's reactions to the event. One got upset, couldn't get his upsettedness out of his mind. His anger stuck. It stopped him in everything he tried to do. And it not only stopped him from changing the tire very quickly, but it ruined him for the meeting. The other said, ha ha, this is my day, this is my challenge. And if I've ever changed a flat tire, this is going to be my record. Maintains a very cool composure, just like Joe Montana with 2 minutes to go, very cool and calm. And notice when you sit back there and hear this story, you can identify with both. You've been both places. What we're going to try and help you to do with this whole program is help you to get to that second place, to the mentally tough place, on a much more consistent basis. First and foremost, by alerting you to this. Secondly, by giving you the tools that'll help you get there on a much more consistent basis.
And in terms of the cost to both performers, in terms of stress, in terms of energy expenditure, the first person who became angry and upset, the cost was enormous. He did not periodize his episodes of stress very satisfactorily. In the second case, the same arena, but the cost to him was infinitely less. He actually was recuperating, recovering on his way to work, so that when he reached the deck, that was a warm-up. He was actually periodizing a relaxation recovery in spite of the fact there was a problem that he encountered during that relaxation time. That's what we mean when we talk about a peak performer. He took what was given him, and he was able to use it to draw out the emotions and the energy experience that made it possible for him to be at his best at the most important time. Stress is clearly a biochemical event, one which we can measure. We first of all can trace the biochemical response originating in the limbic system of the brain through the activation of the hypothalamus, which triggers the hormone ACTH, which very quickly is received by the adrenal cortex that sits on top of the kidneys. And that begins a powerful response, which we call the catecholamine response. Levels of epinephrine, norepinephrine, a very powerful change in the chemistry of the brain, as well as the activation of a number of very powerful hormones throughout the body, the stress hormones, activate muscle tension levels, heart rate, elevation in blood pressure, dilation of the pupils, blood flow to the hands and the feet are altered and reduced. This is an event which either prepares the body for fighting, which is part of the fight or flight mechanism, or it prepares the body to run away, to flee. When you get angry, there is a biochemical event, and it is measurable in terms of its impact on the physiology of the body. The very same thing is true in terms of fear. Fear is measurable, and it is different. Norepinephrine is really the basis of anger, and epinephrine is the principal basis of fear. So there is a chemistry. It is real, and these feelings that we have are anchored in very measurable physiological events.
Marie Amoruso of Apple, knowing they were going through a reorganization and foreseeing the stress that was going to occur, because she had gone through Mentally Tough, said to herself, if Mentally Tough has helped me face stress and come out on top, learned she ran a lot more, she ate differently, she based her diet on 65% complex carbohydrates, she was handling herself and her stress better. She said, if I can anticipate that the stress is going to be coming in as I formulate this new marketing department for Apple Computer, then what if I do for the whole group, the corporate culture, what Mentally Tough did for me, help me, in fact, face stress in a new way? So what we did was start this program called the Director of Mirth, which was meant to do for a group of people what Mentally Tough can do for one single person. And, in fact, got a series of volunteers to, for each month, for an entire year, play the Director of Mirth. And their job was to bring joy, fun, love into the department in any way they could, from practical jokes to cartoons to Apple links being sent around with humor, all sorts of funny things happening. And ultimately what we find is that, in fact, we have to act as our own Director of Mirth. And if we do, we will immediately begin to alleviate the cycles of stress with the cycles of mirth, which is also a wave that's opposite and equal to the stress cycle. I think it's a great example. I think it's great for corporate cultures. I think it's great for homes. I think if you could go home tonight and start turning your environment into something where mirth and fun prevail as opposed to pain, then I believe you'd have a much better home advantage, and your kids would be learning at the same time how to avoid the problems of stress.
So to summarize, the key is not to eliminate stress in your life. In fact, stress is essential for healthy functioning. That our bodies break down, just as a muscle breaks down in the body, if it isn't stressed, it atrophies. We have to have stress in our lives. In fact, stress is the essence of life, so long as it is balanced by appropriate recovery. So what is excessive stress? Excessive stress is imbalance in the recovery process. It's asymmetrical in terms of its recovery cycle. So that any time you stress, you have a stress cycle that is balanced with appropriate recovery, then it's okay. And in fact, you are enhancing life, you are enhancing vitality, your immune system will function better, you are going to be able to, you're keeping your batteries charged. The yin and the yang, the light and the dark, everything in life is in cycles. And that's exactly what we must think of our lives. We must characterize everything we do in terms of this relationship. But to avoid stress is as much a mistake as too much stress. So the more we can tune into the importance of balancing our cycles, the better chance we're going to have of managing energy. And that's really what we're doing again. We're managing energy. Now, what are the cycles of stress that are costing us the most and are the most non-productive? We know that getting into cycles of anger and even cycles of extreme fear and so forth cost us dearly. Those produce chronic cycles of depressed recovery, insufficient recovery. We need to look at ways to clear negative emotion as quickly as we can, because we know the cost is so great. When we look at exercise, what Peter was talking about in terms of mirth, what he will be talking about and we'll be talking about later in terms of humor. These are essential to breaking cycles of negative emotion. But we must understand that those are the kinds of energy experiences which cost us dearly, which make it more difficult to get symmetrical, balanced waves of energy and recovery.